Parshas B'Shalach. Parshas B'Shalach. It's very, very rare that we have Tu B'Shvat falling on Shabbos Shira. It usually falls within the week following or before Parshas Shira, but it's very rare that you have Tu B'Shvat falling on Parshas B'Shalach, which is Shabbos Shira. And I want to address the relationship between the two, and also address a more basic question: why is it called Shabbos Shira? Shabbos Shira. Why is it called Shabbos Shira? Because it's the Shabbos that you read the Shira. Next week is an even bigger thing. It's called Kabbalah Torah. Parshas Yisro, you receive the Torah. Next week we receive the Torah, we don't call it Shabbos Torah. Therefore, why is it that this week we call it Shabbos Shira? The Shabbos Shira. What's the connection to Shabbos Shira? Because we read the Shira on Shabbos? What's the idea behind this? So I don't know whether any of you have a... have ever seen a cardiograph. I've seen a cardiograph or a... or never anyone's been involved in a lie detector. There's certain times where it's on the screen, and then it goes on the ticker timer, it goes on the ticker tape, and it goes up and it goes down, and it goes up and it goes down, and sometimes it goes off the screen. It goes so high and it goes so low, it just pushes it off the map. It's off the screen, it's off the tape. It just doesn't measure it. Every parasha in the Torah basically has its ups and downs. Very small ups, very small downs. You have parashas where it's difficult to see where it goes up and down. A mitzvah and another mitzvah goes up and it goes down and goes up. Very, very slight. You get parashas that are incredibly exciting, but there's one up and that's it. And it goes down and everything's smooth. You know, for example, Yosef saying Ani Yosef. So you go up and you go down and that's it. It's smooth after that. And you get times where it's all the way down. Your Kadishol, you got Techocha, whatever it is, it goes up and it goes down. There is rarely a parasha, I don't believe any other parasha in the Torah, that has many ups and downs as Parshas B'Shalach. Klal Yisrael leave Mitzrayim. They're flying. They're excited. They're going towards Eretz Yisrael. They're going towards Kabbalah HaTorah. Everything's going really, really well for them. All of a sudden, we have Paroi completely closing them in. And it's literally between a devil and a deep blue sea. And they don't see. They do not see any way out. And it's crisis. And they're crying, and they're shouting, and they're suicidal. What are we going to do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you now, on a very, very terrible low, I'll take it to a tremendous high. And he splits the sea. And he makes 10 nisim on the sea. There's fruit growing inside the tunnels. There's glass tunnels. There's water that you put your hand there, and it fills up a cup of water, and it stops you to take your hand away. Unbelievable. The kids were having a fantastic time. Can you imagine what's going on there? The adults, there was this nevuah, it was unbelievable. What a high. And all of a sudden, down. Was it down? There's no water. And they're complaining, bitterly. Why is no water? Because the water's bitter. Terrible water, it's inedible. Terrible, what are you going to drink? Okay, Coach Baruch said to Moshe, take a bit of wood, put it in, a piece of bitter wood, put it in, up, fantastic, now they have the water again. And then it's carried on. And there's no food. And they're starving. They've got no food. The crisis. All the way down again. Hashem says, fine. You want food? I'll give you fantastic food. The best food mankind has ever seen. I'll give you mon. All the way up again. And then he goes down again. There's no water. Okay. Complaining all the way down. Fine. Hashem says, fine. Hit the rock. Water comes out. Fantastic. And then you have a Moloch. A Moloch come along. Suicide bombers. They're suicide bombers. They know they're not going to be successful. And they come along and have a war, and Kosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe Rabbeinu, put your hands up there, and Klal Yisrael have a totally successful war, and they beat them. Up and down, up and down, up and down, peaks and valleys. And what a parasha. What a gripping parasha. At the end of the parasha, we sit back and we think to ourselves, wow, what a parasha. And what happened to them in the end? They got across the sea, they got their water, they got their food, they beat Amalek, and Baruch Hashem, now they're going to receive the Torah. Wow, unbelievable. Shira comes from the word yashar, straight. When everything looks really terrible, there's things are going in crisis mode. There's up and there's down, and there's down and there's up, and you don't know what's going on, and all of a sudden everything works itself out. Then you sing Shira. Yeshira comes from the word Yashar. This week's parasha is a most gripping parasha. There's no parasha that has many ups and downs and ends up Yashar at the end of it. That is the Shabbos Shira. Shabbos Shira means that we're going to take the Shabbos and not only just learn the parasha, read it, and you know, hear the Baal Kleira sing a nice, nice tune, and oh, fantastic, you only get this once a year. There's got to be something that you come to Shabbos and you look back into our own lives and we see within ourselves that we have ups and downs. Life isn't always easy. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down, and sometimes it's crisis, and sometimes it goes over. But at the end of the day, Baruch Hashem, we're living where we are, and it's been difficult times, and if we don't see how things have sorted themselves out, we will see the Osed Lavoi. After 120, we'll see how well things actually worked out. But we've got to make the Shabbos a Shabbos Shira. You've got to make the Shabbos looking into our own lives and bringing perspective into what's going on, and we say, you know what, there's ups and there's downs, but things usually work themselves out. It's Yashar. Things are fine. That's how our Shabbos is going to look. Especially this year, where we have Shabbos falling on Tu B'Shvat. What's Tu B'Shvat? What is Tu B'Shvat? Imagine a person was born and he had the maturity of a 20-year-old. A baby was born and had the maturity of a 20-year-old. And he looks out the window. Eretz Yisrael is not a good example. But he looks out the window, let's say, in New York. And he's looking out the window, now, end of January. And Tu B'Shvat, what's Tu B'Shvat? We're celebrating the trees. What trees? They're dead. There's snow on the ground. These trees, there's nothing there. They've completely got no leaves on them. There's no fruit. There's no blossoms. There's no flowers. What, now we're celebrating nature? What nature? I've never seen nature, said a 20-year-old. He's born. He's never seen before. Trees growing and blossoming. And now we're celebrating. What are we celebrating? A dead tree. So what do we say to him? We've got experience. We live with a background, and I'm telling you now, you don't see anything now. But, the sap is beginning to rise in the tree. And in a short period of time, you're going to see beautiful blossoms. You're going to see outstanding fruits growing on the trees. You're going to see flowers. You're going to see fruits. You're going to have the smell of all different beautiful, luxurious scents of all different flowers blossoming, and the trees giving off their abundance of bracha, and now we're celebrating that. But I don't see it! You don't see it. But I'm telling you now, I have a track history, I have a track record of knowing at this time of the year, the sap is rising and things are going to end up yashar. They're going to be fine. Look out the window and it's going to be fine. You know, in America, maple syrup is a multi-million dollar business. Multi-million dollar business. Actually, in Canada, in Quebec, it's where the main suppliers are. But even in Vermont is millions and millions of dollars worth of maple syrup. And you know when they get the maple syrup out? Am I correct, Ian? They get it out in February and March, where the trees, maple tree is a beautiful tree. It's a very symmetrical tree. It's got a very, very large trunk, and it's got beautiful leaves, but it looks dead. And the time when it looks dead, that's when they're making little holes in the maple tree, and they're getting out all the sap. They're getting out the syrup. That is when it's coming out. Why? Because the sap is rising when things look bleak. When things look not that good, that is when we know that things work out yashar, and everything's going to be fine, and that's when you celebrate Tu B'Shvat. So this week's parasha is about seeing the ups and downs. It's about knowing that Rebbein Shleim sometimes throws us curveballs, but we know at the end of it, at least if we don't see it, we know for sure, eventually, it all works out yashar. It all works out good. But that's all in perfect hindsight. A person can live not in perfect hindsight, but a person actually tested within the Soyim. And a sign is thrown to him, a test is given to him on his plate. How is he supposed to react that he makes sure that he behaves and sees the yashar even before the sign has ever taken place? Afterwards, things work themselves out. It's not difficult to be a mamin. I can see all worked out. But the question is, how does one do so while the sign is actually in front of you? How does one deal with it then? So in this week's parasha, we have the most climatic situation where Klal Yisrael are standing by the Yam Suf, and it looks an impossible situation. Impossible. The Mitzrayim are there with their gunships and their rocket launchers, and rocket launchers, and they got the infantry coming in from all sides, you know, and you can hear the machine blast, and they're getting right there. And where do they go? Swim. I know Jews could swim. What are they going to do? How are they going to get in there? What are they going to do? They have swimming classes in Mitzrayim. What are they going to do? It looks absolutely impossible. It looks impossible. So it says there on the parasha that there were four groups of people who actually took this impossible situation and reacted all very, very differently. The parasha says that this. It's brought down in the Medrash. The Rebbeinu B'chayei brings this out. It says that this. It says that there were four different groups of people. One group of people basically said, Rebbeinu Shleilam, that's it. Cut the cord. We're committing suicide. We're jumping into the sea. We are not going to be taken back to Mitzrayim and taken as slaves again. Never again! Never again! That's it. Never going to happen to us again. We are not going back. We are staying right here. We're going to jump into the sea and we'll drown. We're not getting taken back to Mitzrayim. That's it. That's the first group. Suicide. That's it. End of the world is night. Going to commit suicide. Suicide cultists. That's it. We're giving up. Jump into the sea. That's group one. Group number two were those people who said, no. Let's not rock the boat. Let's be diplomatic. Let's think this through logically. If Mitzrayim want us back, so we'll go back. We'll sort ourselves out. We're not going to argue. Whatever will be. Let's leave it to fate. No, that's it. We're not going to get too involved. Let's not panic. Everything will be fine. If it's not fine, so it doesn't matter. That's the second group. The third group are the militant groups. Well, we're going to go back to Mitzrayim. We're not going to go back to Mitzrayim. We're not going to jump into the sea. We're going to go and die. Let the best man win. And if we don't win, let us die at least being heroes. We're not going back to Mitzrayim. We're going to go until we die. We're going to actually go along Mitzrayim, and we're going to fight them to the last bit of blood. We're never, ever going to go back there. We're never, ever going to give up. We're going to fight them. The militant groups. And the fourth group was a group who started yelling. Shouting, yelling. Now, two different Mepharshim explain yelling in two different ways. Some Mepharshim explain it that they were yelling and davening to Rabbeinu Shlomo. They were crying out to Rabbeinu Shlomo. And the other Peshatli said they're actually yelling and complaining. Oh, look at us, what a terrible situation, and started crying and moping. They were complaining. So there were really four groups, call it five groups. Okay? We have first of all the first group, who are the suicide squad, that's it, they're going in there, they're dying, that's it, might as well cut the cord. We had the second group, who are the people who were, the diplomats, we're going to go back, not going to make any fuss, not going to rock the boat, they want us back, we'll go back, no big deal, that's it. The third group were the people who are militants, and the fourth group were those people who were shouting, either they were davening or they were complaining. How do we see it in the Pasuk? Rebbeinu B'chayei says that this, in Perek Yudal Apostle Yud Gimel, Vayomer Moshe La'om, Moshe said to the nation, Al Tirol, don't worry, Hisyatzvu, stand by, U'u Es Yeshua Hashem, and see the redemption HaKadosh Baruch Hu has ready for you. Ashiyase Lochem Hayoim, that he'll do for you today. So the first group was, Moshe saying to them, you're giving up, you want to be suicidal? Don't. Alti roll. Don't worry. Relax. Be okay. Everything will be fine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you a redemption. Everything will be fine. The second group, who wants to go back to Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, Ki asher re'isem et Mitzrayim hayoyim, that you see Egypt today, you want to go back there? Loi soisifun lira'isem oidel olam. You're never going to go back there again. That's it. You're not going back to Mitzrayim. You want to go back? You're not going back. By the way, is it issur to go back to Mitzrayim and live there? The Rambam in many places writes, Ani Moshe ben Maimon was over on Lavim every day of living in Egypt. Why he lived in Egypt is a different discussion. He was a very, very famous doctor there. He was a doctor of Suleiman the Magnificent, the one who built the old city walls. But he lived in Mitzrayim. And therefore there's an issue to go back to Mitzrayim. The question whether it's one of the minyan mitzvahs or not. But he says, don't go back to Mitzrayim. Don't. Not going to go back to Mitzrayim. The third group that said, we're going to go and have a fight. So Moshe Rabbeinu to them, Hashem Yilochem Lochem. You don't fight. Hashem will fight for you. Stand by, be quiet. And the last group who are yelling and shouting, Va'atem Tachrishon, zip it up. Quiet. I don't want to hear any more. Tachrishon, be a cheresh, be quiet. So there are four groups over here. Four groups over here who are dealing with this situation in four very, very different ways. In every situation, I have, and I've thought about this a lot, people act in these four different ways. Let's say, let's not be political over here, let's take the example of the expulsion from Gush Katif. The expulsion from Gush Katif, where Jews who built up an area with Mesiris Nefesh, and they were encouraged by the government to live there, were thrown out for the sake of some peace talks. Okay? I'm not going into whether it was right, whether it was wrong, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at this point. But there were very clearly four groups of people. Some groups, as far as I know, went deep into depression. That's it. Yeush. There's no point. No point carrying on. And I don't blame them. Okay? There's no point. Yeush. They gave up. They just threw their hands up. Were they actually suicidal? I don't know. But you can well understand. They're yeush. The second group, we're going to do diplomacy. That's what the government wants. We're citizens of this nation. That we it's an agenda of the government, which actually we've actually voted them in. And whatever they want, we're going to follow along. We get our compensation. We don't get a compensation. We get moved. We don't get moved. We're not rocking the boat. We're going to do whatever they say. That's it. We're law-abiding citizens. We're not going to rock the boat. The third group were these boys who stood on top of the shuls, throwing down hot water on the soldiers who were trying to climb up and evacuate them. Barricaded themselves behind all different doors and put themselves up on top of buildings and you know, they actually fought very, very violently against the police. And the fourth group were a group who actually made a very, very good PR campaign. Wasn't successful, but a very, you know, the orange PR campaign, and all people wore these little orange things, and whether the PR campaign was done in a way of protest or whether it was actually done through tefillah. Be that as it may, these are the people who are the fourth group who are shouting. Okay? They had blogs, they had the internet sites, whatever, fine. But there are four different groups. Take that same four groups. Rahman al-Islam, the person diagnosed with cancer. Nebuch, he's a healthy man, he has a family, he has a business, and he goes to a doctor, expecting the doctor to give him a clean bill of health, and the doctor says, you have cancer, you have liver cancer. You have a few months to live. One group, that's it. Mercy killing. Commit suicide, that's it. The other group, I haven't got energy for this, whatever will be, you know, that's it. I'm not going to go, if I go for chemo, don't go for chemo, I don't really know, da da da. Get a third group, Rahman al-Islam, who's going to fight this. They're going to fight this. They're going to go to every doctor, no money spared, they're going to fight this illness, they're not going to go down. They're not going to go down, they're going to fight this illness to the very end. And the fourth group are those people who go along to Gedolim, who go along to Rabbonim, you know, they send different people to make tehillim for them. Different people who are shouting, four different ways of approaching different problems. Which is right, which is wrong, the answer is, they're all right, and sometimes they're all wrong. It really depends on the situation. But be that as it may, every one of these four groups have a derech, learnt out from this week's parsha, to work through in their particular way, and come out yashar, even before the result has actually happened. In other words, they have a way of working through the problem, and coming out with a derech, even before HaKadosh Baruch Hu has helped them with their problem. They have the bechira to choose their particular way. Very, very quickly, I haven't got much time. But let's start off with the first group. The first group are those people who are, end of the world is Ninix. And that's it, there's no point in surviving, there's no point in fighting this, we're dead, let's commit suicide now, you know, that's it. Let's close the curtains and curl up and die.
Is it that they actively commit suicide, or they just...
They wanted to actively commit suicide. But in this particular case, not many people actively commit suicide, but these people are totally given up hope. There's no point fighting. That's it. It's all over. How do we deal with this? How do we deal with this? So there is a very, very interesting medrash. The medrash says like this. The medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu began Shira with Oz Yashir Moshe. Oz. Yeah, the Oz. Now why you start off with the word Oz? Oz then. So a lot is learned from the word Oz. But Oz Yoshim Moshe, Oz, is a very very strange word. Says in Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu started off Shira with the word Oz. You know why? Because he was doing tshuva for a different word he said Oz previously that he should not have said. In the end of Parsha Shemot, Moshe Rabbeinu was sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go along and try and negotiate a deal with Pari. And it didn't work. It just made things worse. So Moshe Rabbeinu said back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Perek Hei, Pasuk Chof Beis, Vayoshev Moshe Lashem, Moshe returned to Hashem, Vayoymeh Adonai Loma Hare Oysu Lo'om Azeh, Loma Zeh Shlachtoni. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why making it worse? Why did he send me? Umei Oz, and from Oz, and from then, Basiel Pari, when I came to Pari, Dada Bishmech, speaking your name, Heira Lo'omazay made it worse, Vahatzel Le'itzaltet Amechli did not save your nation. Oz, from that time, says a Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu said the word Oz, then may Oz, from that time he complained against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu later on, you'll see. And Moshe Rabbeinu did see, and he says, Oz Yashir Moshe. Then Moshe Rabbeinu said the Shira. What's the idea? What's the idea? So the Mefarshim explained, the Balamus explained something very, very beautiful. Straight away, at the end of the Shira, what happened? Moshe Rabbeinu was taking Klal Yisrael across the sea, and people had Nevuah. What happened? What happened? They come to a place and the water is bitter. So what do? They have to take a piece of wood, and it gets thrown into the water and it turns sweet. Now what was this piece of wood? That piece of wood itself was bitter. Ask them the following two questions. Number one, why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu have to make it that he takes them to a place and the water is bitter? Number one, make it sweet. What's the problem? We're short of sweet water. Make it sweet. Number one. Number two, even if it is bitter, why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu tell them to take a bitter herb and throw it in? How Kodesh Baruch Hu always minimizes miracles. And therefore, ultimately, it makes more sense to tell them to throw in a sweet herb and make it sweet through that. If you've got a coffee and the coffee is bitter, you don't put something else more bitter to make it sweet. 2 minus to make a plus works in mathematics, not in the kitchen. And therefore, why does it say, put in a, Hashem says to Moshe, put in a bitter herb and make it sweet. On the contrary, put in something sweet. Answers in the forest, you know why? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving a lesson to Klal Yisrael right then. A very important lesson. Something that looks terribly bitter, ultimately, usually, with a Kodesh Baruch Hu's help, turns out sweet. You can have water looking impossible. It's bitter. It's disgusting. It's terrible, terrible taste. You throw in something bitter. It looks bitter. That can actually make it sweet. I'll give you an example. I had a friend who complained bitterly to me a few years ago that he could not get a loan from the bank. The bank had negotiated with him a loan to buy a piece of big piece of property in England. And they managed to get the loan just before he closed and bought the piece of property. The bank pulled out and they refused to give him the loan. And this person was left with, first of all, a very, very bad reputation. But second of all, he was bitterly disappointed that the bank pulled out and he was left without this property. I spoke to him about 6 months ago. And he said, if I would have got the loan, I would have bought that property. That property has gone down about 50% in the last 3 years. Nobody wants to rent it from me. I would have been with a property left in my hand, owing money to the bank, not having somebody to rent out my property, and a property worth 50% less than I bought it for. Baruch Hashem, the bank never lent me that money. This was what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Oz, I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same word I said then. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for making it so bad for Klal Yisrael then. You know why? Because that is how Klal Yisrael got out from Mitzrayim. If they would have not had so much suffering then the Golos would not have been so bitter. And if that was the case, they would have been longer in Mitzrayim, and they would never have survived the Tumah in Mitzrayim. And therefore it had to be so bad in order to get them out of Mitzrayim. Now I understand it. Thank you, Hashem, for making it look so bad then, because now I understand how good it was ultimately for them at that particular stage. That's what we're saying over here. Take a bitter herb and throw it in the water. Bitter actually is sometimes very, very sweet. Those people who give up, oi, terrible, what's going to be? You know what? Ultimately, everything Hashem does is for the good. It looks very bitter, but it's going to be good. And therefore, don't give up hope. Don't be so upset. Don't be so negative. Ultimately, something looks terrible actually and usually turns out that you can see it at least to the good. Sometimes you can't see it, sometimes only after 120, but it always comes out good. That's for the first group of people. Those people are very, very bitter, very upset, very, very negative. It'll turn out good. That's the first lesson. The second lesson is for those people who ultimately are very, you know, they're very neutral, go through life very neutral. Now, I imagined there's a case and there's a story in a joke they say in London. There's on the way from Stamford Hill to Golders Green, there's a park, beautiful park, they're called Kenwood Park. Yeah, Kenwood Park. By Kenwood Park, there's an old pub that is a listed building in the middle of the road. splits the building middle of the road, and it comes from a two-lane into a one-lane, and then it goes back to two-lane again. So there's a bottleneck there. So if you want to get through, you're actually relying on the other person either being polite, or, yeah, you're being polite and that other person goes through, but two cars can't come through at the same time. You know what I'm talking about, yeah? So the joke is that you have two Englishmen who are sitting there, and they're both refusing that other person go through. Yeah? No hooting, there's no beeping, nothing, you just sit there. One guy decides, this is crazy, I'm getting bored. And they're both sitting there, perfect quiet, you know, they're just sitting there, their hands folded. He pulls out a novel. Reads the introduction, puts his seat back, all the way back, is putting his feet up on the dashboard, reads the preface, reads the novel, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 20, page 30, page 40. Anyway, gets to page 110, get knock on the windscreen. There's the other driver. Oh, Baruch Hashem, the guy's got some seichel. What's the deal? What's the deal? He says, do me a favor, when you finish a book, do you mind giving it over to me? He says, That's London! In America, you pull out a shotgun! You blow the guy off the street. Yeah, but it's such a, you know, if on an underground train. If people came up and pummeled somebody, punched him in the face, what would they do? Absolutely nothing. They'd read the papers. Karen reading the Financial Times, you know, smooth their trousers down, and Karen reading. This will happen in Eretz Yisrael. Pandemonium. There'll be fists all over the place. Right? It's just different culture creates different environment and different things happen. You know, suitcases come late. Depends on which country you are. It's fascinating. Depends on which country you are. Suitcases come an hour late. What happens? Some places people are jumping up and down, you know, tearing the place up. It's absolute quiet. You know, nobody's saying anything. You know, it's completely out of character to speak up. So, I'm not saying who's right and who's wrong, but you have a case where Klal Yisrael have a group who are absolutely quiet. I wish there were more of them. But they're absolutely quiet. Now, what's with these people? How do you deal with these people? So there is in this week's parasha a very, very interesting pasuk dealing here with Ammon. Okay? Dealing here with Ammon. And Ammon, it says, in describing this week's parasha, very beautiful parasha of learning Be'iyun, how to run through one's life and deal with pressures and paranoia. Fascinating. But it does say, in the beginning of the parasha, Perek Tzayin, Hakadosh Baruch Hu listened to the complaints against Klal Yisrael, and he describes what the mom was. It was thin. Klal Yisrael said, Perek Tzayin Pasuk Tesvav, Vayiru Bnei Yisrael. Klal Yisrael saw it. Listen carefully. Vayomru Ish Al Ochiv, and one man said to his friend, Mon Hu. Mon Hu means, what's Mon Hu? What is it? Like Mazeh, what is this? Mon Hu, what is it? Didn't know what it was. Later on, much later on, in the parasha, it talks about Shabbos, and the pasuk says in Perek Tezayin, Prophet Lamed Aleph, Vayikru Bnei Yisrael Eshmoy Mon. They called it Mon, for who kizera gadlovon metamoi katsapichos bedvash, and it tasted this gadlovon, and it had a taste of cake in honey. Okay, so here they said, what is it? Later on they said, v'yikrosh mon, they called it what it is. They called it what it is. You see that? Beforehand they called it what is it. Prophet says, Mahu, Monhu, and later on it said, and they called it Eshumoy Mon, they called it what it is. Okay? What it is. Number one. Number two, beforehand the prophet doesn't talk about the taste. Later on, only by Shabbos it said what it tasted like. Why? Number three, over here it said it tasted like cake in honey, but in Parashat Baloyisko it said it tasted like dough in oil. Oily dough. So what did it taste like? Oily dough or delicious cake and honey? What's going on here? Explains the Balei Musar beautifully. Beautiful. Number one, what's the deal of calling it, what is it, and then calling it, it is what? Calling it is what? Number one. Number two, by Shabbos, is the first time I only hear about the taste. Why didn't I hear about the taste earlier? And number three, even the taste we do hear about Shabbos, is the taste of cake in honey, where in Parshas Vayishlach it is an oily dough. What's the difference? Explain it by the Balabusa, beautiful. The Chofetz Chaim al Torah says, Mon tasted like anything you wanted it to taste of. The Shining Mephoroshim, where it actually turned into what you wanted it to taste of. In other words, did it turn into the texture? Say you wanted it to taste of popcorn, right? Did it turn into popcorn? You want it to taste into marshmallows? Did it turn into marshmallows? It's a whole shayla. Therefore, what bracha you make is a whole discussion. Ultimately, you make a weitz lechem and hashamayim. There's a whole discussion up here, halacha, what it was. Okay? But there's a whole discussion. Ask the Chofetz Chaim, what happens if you didn't think of anything? What does it taste of? The answer is, it tastes of nothing. Oy mitracht garnished, es schmeckt garnished. If you don't think of anything, it doesn't taste of anything. So says the Chofetz Chaim. Explain the Balam Muslim appeared there a Chofetz Chaim like this. That originally, they're busy. In the week, what's going on here? There's stocks, there's shares, there's all stuff going on. Not thinking too much about the food. You know what it tasted of? What is it? I don't know what it is. I'm not thinking too much about it. No potential. Not thinking too much. You know what it tasted of? Oily dough. It tastes of oily dough. You don't think anything about it? It tastes like oily dough. Only by Shabbos, when they said what it is. What is it? It is what you make of it. It is what? Sorry. It is what? They call it is what? What does it mean it is what? It is what you make out of life. That is how it's going to taste. That is the first time the bread actually tasted like cake in honey. Before it had no taste. Do you know what I mean? It is what? And therefore it tastes like oily dough. Only it is what? When you realize you have a koyach to make your life take a direction and you can predestine how your life is going to look, that is when it tasted like cake and honey. Those people who go through life, I don't know, whatever will be, you're right. You'll have no focus and whatever will be. But if you take it into hand and you give it some time, you put some mind into it, you put some self-confidence into it, you put some money into it, your life can taste from oily dough into delicious cake and honey. That's those people who whatever will be. No. Take a stand and you can change your life. Take your life into your own hands and you can make a difference. That's the second group. The third group are those people with war. We haven't got very long. That's one very quickly. Those people with war. They wanted to make war. Ask Chasam Shofar, why didn't they make war? They had the weapons. I'll prove it to you. End of the parasha, they fought Amalek, and they were very successful. So why did not fight against Mitzrayim? Why didn't they just take the weapons and wipe out Mitzrayim? V'chamushim oli som Mitzrayim. Chamushim means they were armed. They took with them all the weapons they needed. So why didn't they fight against Mitzrayim? The answer is, says Chasam Shofar, you know, they weren't allowed to. You know why? Because these people hosted them all those years. Hosted them! They enslaved them! Yes, but they fed you. And if they fed you and they gave you a home and you needed it because you're supposed to go into Golus, you cannot take your knife or your gun or your sword or your arrow and shoot and kill the person that has actually given you anything. You can't do that. That is not Derech Eretz. Hashem has got to deal with that for you. Hashem will deal with it. You don't have to deal with it. Amalek! Amalek, for sure you can go and kill. But Mitzrayim, you cannot fight against it. It's not Derech Eretz. This is a very, very powerful message. People make fights, serious fights, with parents. Parents sometimes are very, very difficult. They're very difficult. Very difficult to deal with parents. Some have unreal expectations. Parents are very possessive. And they make open war against their parents. Sometimes it's correct. Sometimes we ask a shayla. Sometimes that's what one has to do. But ultimately, these are people. A mother has gone through 9 months of discomfort, has given birth, has been up those nights feeding the child, dealing with a toothache, putting them through school, cooking, cleaning the clothes, and then he can make war a few years later because the parents said a not nice comment, and that's it, open war. If you can't fight against Mitzrayim, you can't fight against your parents. Those people who want to make war, militants. Hashem says, very nice, but not against those people who have helped you. You cannot stand up and make war against those people who have given you anything. So of course, there are exceptions, and of course, there are different drachim that we are involved in this, but generally speaking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a lesson in Derech Eretz over here. Don't go and fight Mitzrayim. In the end of the parasha, we have another war. That's the war between Klal Yisrael and Amalek. Who do we have in the war? We have Moshe Rabbeinu, ultimately, who is fighting the war with two people on his side. Who is that? Aaron on one side and Chor on the other. Who is Chor? Hur is the nephew of Moshe Rabbeinu. He is Miriam's son, who later on got killed in Parashat Kisiso. They wanted to make the Hur, they wanted to make the Egel. Hur stood up and said, "You're crazy! You're miscalculating! Stop! You can't make a, you can't make an Egel!" And the mob killed him. That was Hur. Hur was a lone voice of sense against. He is a voice who spoke out against anybody and spoke the truth. Moshe Rabbeinu is standing in war. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when you're standing in war, two people got to be on your side. Number one, the man of peace. When you're fighting a war, you've got to be one step away from somebody who's going to show you how to make shalom, how to make peace. You want to fight? Fight. But at a certain time, you've got to step back and say, okay, now's the time for peace. Now you've got to step back and make peace. That's Aaron on one side. On the other hand, if a war has to be done, don't capitulate. Don't surrender too early. If Hur is standing at your side, Hur's going to say, fight on, fight on, fight on. Don't give up. If you're fighting war that has to be fought, don't give up if you're not supposed to give up. You know, the last Israeli-Lebanese war. Yeah, the soldiers got captured. Yeah, we're going to take them until we get all the soldiers back. And this, and that, and this. And what happened in the end? They surrendered far too early. It was a very, very serious misjudgment. Fight on. Fight on. In Iraq. In Iraq, the first war of Iraq. They could have just taken Saddam Hussein right then. All they do, they left it for years and things developed, got out of control, now they're stuck in there. Carry on fighting. Sometimes you've got to carry on fighting until you've actually got to where you want to get to. So on one side you have a man of peace, and the other man, other side you have a man who's saying, keep going, keep going, keep going. Okay? So that's a lesson for those people who are fighting. Know who you're fighting against, and know how your fight should look. And finally, those people who are shouting. So those people who are shouting against the disaster are two different ways of learning it. Either they were shouting and doubling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or they were complaining. Now, let's understand this. Fighting, in other words, they were complaining against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can understand why that's terrible. But what is wrong with davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, sure, check it, I don't want to hear. What do you mean? We say the greatest tefillahs are done in times of tzar. The Rambam paskens that you've got to daven in a place in a situation where a person feels stressed. What is wrong with davening? So the Kotzker says something amazing. The Kotzker says that we say that the gates, every gate has been closed besides the gates of tears. The gates of tears never been closed. Ask the Kotzker, if the gates of tears never closed, why bother having the gates? They never closed, might as well just open the gate and walk in. Why bother having gates in the first place? Answer the Kotzker, the gates are there to be closed against those people who cry in desperation. If you want to cry, cry. But don't cry desperately. There's no such thing as desperation ever. Ever. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, and he told Klal Yisrael, I'm going to take you and you're going to get the Torah. I'm going to take you to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to wipe you out now. What's wrong with you? What's this desperation? Why are you throwing your hands up? Hey, yelling and crying. Don't do that. Don't cry. That is desperate. I don't want to hear that. What should you be saying? Chacham Sofer. Ma titzak elai. Ma titzak elai does not mean, why are they shouting out to me? But it translates it, ma titzak elai. What should I do? That is what they should be shouting to me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not desperate, but tell me, what should I be doing now? Show me direction. Ma titzak elai. What should I do? That's what they should be shouting out to me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not trying to shush them when it comes to sincere tefillah. That matters like a lie. Of course I'll answer you. What should I do? Help me. What should I do? That's one thing. But desperation, the doors are slammed shut. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to them. Atim Tachrishim. Be quiet. That is what we're talking about. Those people who are shouting out and davening. Sometimes the davening is wrong. No desperation. But just for direction, that is how it should be davening. The Gra'ari speaks about this as well in length. We're not going into that now. And finally, those people who are complaining. What people are complaining? The Pasuk says in Tehillim, in Kuf Vav, Pasuk Zayin, if you want to look over there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, and the Klal Yisrael rebelled against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bayam, Bayam Suf. In the Yam Suf. What's the two things, Bayam and Bayam Suf? So Bayam was the fact HaKadosh Baruch Hu says go into the sea, and it did not have a munah, and they refused to go in, and they were scared, until Nachshon Ben Amnon went in, and the sea split. So that was one case of protest. They actually went against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bayam Suf. What's Bayam? What's Bayam Suf? What's that all about? says the Mephoshim that Klai Yisrael left the Yam Suf and their shoes were muddy. And he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our shoes are muddy. Took us through, our shoes were clean before we started all this. Look at our shoes, they're muddy now. They protested and they complained that their shoes were muddy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken them, saved them from a mighty army, caused unbelievable miracles, tremendous abundance through the little tunnels there they were walking through. Unbelievable, they see the Nissan when it flies for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, but the shoes were muddy. Reminds me of a little anecdote they say about this Jewish mother standing by the beach. Yeah, and all of a sudden a big wave comes and takes away little Shlomi. And he is all the way out there to sea and he's drowning there. And she shouts, Rabbeinu Shlomi, Rabbeinu Shlomi, please, please bring my son back. And all of a sudden another big wave comes and brings the son all the way back in front of her feet. She says, yeah, Rabbeinu Shlomi. But he went out with a hat. Where's his hat? That's exactly what's going on here. They're going through the Yam Suf. And everything is fantastic. And but the shoes are muddy. That is a koyach of people who complain. Everything is going so well for them in life. They can have a beautiful kiddush in shul. Yeah, but the drinks are warm. The rav could give a beautiful drasha. Yeah, like his tie. And that's the nature of people. They will complain about everything. They'll find something wrong with everything. That is a koyach. And therefore we have four different groups of people. We have those people who are those who give up. Don't give up. Things look bitter, they're actually sweet. We have the group of people who are neutral. They're going through life, floating through life. And that we say to them, don't float through life. Take hand of your situation. You can make an oily piece of dough actually become a sweet cake. The third piece of people who are always fighting. Who are you fighting against? Your family, your friends, your community. You can't do that. You can't fight against Mitzrayim. They give you something. People that give you something and gave you something you can't fight against. That's the third group. Something you've got to fight. But you should not fight against the wrong people and for the wrong reasons. And the fourth group are those people who we talked about who are unfortunately either doubling out of desperation. Don't double out of desperation. Double with ma. How shall I deal with this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Give me direction. Ma titzakilai. And finally those people who are complaining. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you're complaining. Are you crazy? Are you crazy? You know they complained about the mon as well. Every day is Monday. Every day is Monday. That's what they were saying. Grumbling and grumbling. You know how good the mom was? Yeah, but it's Monday again, and it's Monday again, and Monday again. And they complained. Somebody came to Rosh Hashiva. Somebody came to Rosh Hashiva, and he said, I've got a family. I've got a lot of children. Every time I come home from Yeshiva, I come home and there's toys all over the floor. And it's terrible. Terrible. This is what's going on here. So Rosh Hashiva said, you know how many people come to my office crying they don't have any children? And you come home, and there's toys on the floor. So pick them up! These people always complain. They always complain. We've got to know, Be'ezus Hashem, if whatever part, every group we're in, the Torah gives us direction, and we should know even before the Torah is over, how to deal with the Torah, and be yashar from beginning to the very end. And we should all have, Be'ezus Hashem, a straightforward life, that we shouldn't have too many nishayonos, but if we do have nishayonos, it's all sweet, it's all for the Rabbeinu Shlom, and we should celebrate the fact that we're given in a world, surroundings, so looked and beautifully looked after by Kodesh Baruch Hu, who loves us and cares for us, that even before we see the Yeshua, we celebrate it like we see on Tu B'Shvat, that we see, that we know what the track record is, there'll be a beautiful, blossoming, fruitful summer ahead of us.